Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Don't all even of this use gun race here
no
because you are being used
with
right
specious
now.
Arguments
not
when the reason that we have all of this gun crime in urban areas and he's interrupting me again.
Hang on.
The reason that you have all of this gun crime.
Why all the screaming? In media, political circles, and even the neighborhood shopping center or soccer field, we often hear combatant voices piercing one another's views and our eardrums in the process. In this din of discourse comes the question of civility. With all of the talk and screaming, can there also be listening and perhaps, yes, perhaps, an understanding? An understanding of the shawl of ideas and concerns they wish to share and embrace us with. In partnership with Mass Humanities, we present a three-part series entitled Agreeing to Disagree, Civility in Public Discourse. Over the next 3 days during this 10 a.m. hour, we will explore the issues, concepts, and themes of civility and incivility. Today and tomorrow will feature 6 leading scholars on the issue. On Wednesday, we'll open up our phone lines and invite you to join what I hope is an in-depth, comprehensive, and yes, civil discussion. In tackling this project, we quickly learned what a complex topic civility is, with morals, manners, religion, political thought, and philosophy, all ingredients in this great burbling stew of civility. It manages to become a delicate process of contextualizing the individual topics while not forgetting the others breathing down your neck. It is why this morning we'll talk with a professor of English, a professor of political science, and a psychologist. For day one of the series, we look at civility, the American journey. Later in the hour, we'll discuss how manners and rudeness fit into this equation, and also how the tone of politics often reflects our own dysfunctions, and how it also mirrors other key moments in this country's history. We begin with a positive tone. Not a bad place to start for a project on civility. We first speak with Steven Pinker, the Harvard College professor of psychology at Harvard University, a 2-time Pulitzer Prize finalist, and the winner of many awards for his research, teaching, and books. He's been named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world today, and Foreign Policy's 100 global thinkers. His latest book deals with the subject of civility, and it's entitled The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. Pinker believes we are becoming less violent and says we have evolved.
I'm fascinated by all aspects of human nature. And anyone who's interested in human nature has to confront the topic of violence. It's one of the aspects of human behavior that everyone's interested in. And in my earlier books, I defended the very idea that human nature exists, that we are equipped by evolution with a number of motives and emotions and learning mechanisms, and some of them are not so nice. We get jealous, we seek revenge, we seek dominance, we can turn our sense of empathy on and off, and hence you have outbreaks of violence throughout history and prehistory. Now, many readers are disquieted by that idea because they fear that if we have violent propensities, then that would seem to suggest that we're stuck with them. There's no point trying to make the world a better place because people will just foul it up no matter what you do, and that the whole idea of human nature is somehow regressive or reactionary or against progressivism. Now, I've always thought that this was a non sequitur. This just doesn't make sense because human nature is a complicated system. There are many parts to it, and even if there are some parts that can prompt people to be violent, there are other parts of human nature that can push back, that can militate against violence, like self-control, like expanding our sense of empathy, like reasoning our way to arrangements that can tame our dark side. And I mentioned a couple of facts that were consistent with this idea, such as that We have abolished a number of violent institutions like slavery and human sacrifice, that tribal warfare was, if anything, more violent than modern warfare in terms of the percentage of people that were killed, that rates of homicide have gone down through the centuries, as best we can tell. And when I reiterated these remarks in a blog posting a few years ago, I got a flurry of mail from scholars in various fields saying that there was even more evidence for historical declines of violence than I had cited. For example, few people are aware of the fact that the rate of death in warfare has plummeted in the last 65 years. It's many countries, not just one or two, in which homicide has come down over the ages. Rates of child abuse are down. Rates of spousal abuse are down. And it occurred to me that there are all these trends pushing in the same direction. Most people are not aware of them. If you ask someone on the street, they'd probably say that violence has been increasing rather than decreasing. And so it struck me as an important message to get across that we have brought violence down in so many different realms. And also as a psychologist to try to figure out what went right. What have we been succeeding in doing that it managed to bring all this mayhem under control?
I want to talk about what went right in a moment. I was struck by your work and invited you to be a part of this series because in talking about civility, which is what we're doing over these 3 days, is to take a step, because the third chapter in your book is called The Civilizing Process. So it would indicate we're not just talking about violence. We are talking about a more civilized society, that when we look at civility, and for those scholars who are out there saying that we have a civility crisis, again, you look at numbers and indicate that no, there has been a civilizing process.
Yes, that I took that term from a classic book by the German sociologist Norbert Elias, who was characterizing the change in sensibilities from the Middle Ages to the modern times. Among the many trends that took place, there was the decline in rates of violence, as seen in homicide statistics, but also changes in sensibilities. People got more polite. They developed greater self-control in table manners. All our customs like don't start eating till everyone is served. Don't use your spoon and fork in the main serving dish, but use the serving utensils, and anything you put in your mouth doesn't go in the main plate. Don't wipe your nose on the tablecloth. All the things you teach a three-year-old were things that developed gradually over the history of Europe. And one of these manifestations was don't react violently if someone makes a joke at your expense or insults you. Count to 10 and hold your horses and exercise some self-control. And that is a trend that you can see taking place in Europe. And more recently, we've had there are other kinds of sensibility that we have cultivated. When I was a child, it was quite common in respectable company to make ethnic jokes, and you heard them on the radio and saw them on TV. That is pretty much taboo now. There were casual allusions to men beating their wives. That would be beyond the pale nowadays. Racist remarks could be made in polite company, and they're certainly still made in private, but they're no longer permissible in public forums, even in private forums, as we saw with Donald Sterling a couple of weeks ago. So yes, I think there have been a continuing change toward greater sensibility, despite the fact that there are many aspects of popular culture that have coarsened over the last couple of decades. But overall, people have become more sensitive to the kind of harm that coarse manners can lead to.
So back to your original question, which was, what did we do right? So in your opinion, what did we do as a culture right to see this and to learn that perhaps could then turn some of the coarser elements that you just alluded to change those over time as well?
Well, there was government and rule of law. so that you didn't have to settle your own scores, like in the you know, The Godfather and The Sopranos, but you dial 911 or the earlier versions. There was a greater dependence on networks of commerce rather than taking over land and plundering things. If you want to get rich now, you don't you go to South America and plunder their gold. You try to develop companies and educate the workforce. And there's not that many ways to get really, really rich just by stealing stuff, even by stealing land, because wealth doesn't come from land anymore. There's a greater sense of empathy. We know more about people from other parts of the world. We see movies about them. We read books about them. They're brought into our lives in newspapers and magazines and plays and movies. And there's also more of a conscious attempt to reduce violence, but various violence reduction techniques on the international stage. There's sanctions instead of invasion. There's peacekeeping forces. There's the United Nations. There's domestically, we try to think of how we can lower crime on the streets with more intelligent policing and police that work with communities rather than being antagonistic toward them. And so dozens, maybe hundreds of techniques and gadgets and programs and methods where we apply our intelligence to the problem of reducing violence. So all of those, I think, push together to drive rates of violence down. Not perfectly smoothly. There are reversals and outbreaks of violence, sometimes unpredictable, but the overall historical trend has been downward.
You alluded to this earlier, and it is something in our discussions in going to public forums and talking to individuals in libraries in our communities, that when you ask people if they felt that we were becoming more or less civil, they would say less civil. If you ask them if we are becoming more violent or less violent, they would say more violent. Again, you alluded to that earlier. Why do you think that's the perception?
News is about stuff that happens. It's not about stuff that doesn't happen. And so when there's a school that hasn't had a shooting, or a country that hasn't had a war, or a city that hasn't had a riot, you never see a reporter standing there and saying, here we are in Cincinnati and there hasn't been a mass shooting today. if it does happen, and as long as violence hasn't disappeared, there's always going to be some stories to report, and they're going to be the ones that lead the news. And so our impression of the state of the world is disconnected from the actual statistics. Also because the human mind estimates risk by trying to think up examples. What we don't do is think of the ratio between the number of actual incidents of violence and the number of opportunities for violence to have taken place. That is, do the long division with the denominator of all the places where violence has happened, has not happened, as well as where it has happened. We rack our brains. We try to retrieve memories of violent episodes, and if we can think of some, we say, oh yeah, we must be living in violent times. That's the way the human brain works, but that's not the way to get to an accurate estimate.
Also, the conversation will always come around to politics, and it will always come around to a time that we're in now where things are, quote, hopelessly gridlocked, and that nothing can get through. It is often perpetuated by the politicians themselves, but also felt by voters who are declining in number and going to the polls in many elections. And so how do we draw those two together? When you look at it historically and you look at that fact, is this, I mean, should we just be proud of the fact that yes, this is the case now, we're deadlocked, but we're not going back to 150 years ago where we were shooting each other in the streets?
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, we have to recall that just a couple of hundred years ago, we had a fatal duel between the Vice President of the United States and the Secretary of the Treasury. Later around the time of the Civil War, The Senator Charles Sumner was savagely beaten with a cane on the, I don't know if it was the Boston legislature or the Massachusetts legislature or the Congress, but during a speech over slavery, he was beaten to within an inch of his life. Yes, there's a lot to lament about current politics, and there's a lot that could be improved. But we've been through far worse periods in our history.
And overall, when you look at things through your book and through your work, overall, you seem quite optimistic that we're moving in the right direction.
Overall, the trends are going in the right direction. That is, if you base your estimate on actual data and facts rather than what you remember from the news this morning, then the trends are in the right direction. That is, there are fewer wars, fewer people get killed in wars, fewer homicides, fewer less child abuse, less spousal abuse, more democracy. The long-term trends are all in the right direction.
Steven Pinker, I thank you very much for spending time with us. I do appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Steven Pinker is the Harvard College Professor of Psychology at Harvard University and author of the book The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. Our series Agreeing to Disagree, Civility in Public Discourse will continue as we discuss, among other issues, the history of rudeness. This program is funded in part by Mass Humanities, state-based affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities, masshumanities.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.